Sunday sermon topics are selected far in advance, and so the topic for this evening was on the schedule more than a year ago, and actually was deleted because in one of the revisions of that schedule, we had thought that today would be the first Sunday that we would be in our new worship center, and then when some of those inevitable delays came in the building schedule, the preaching schedule was revised, and the topic for tonight was added back in again. I, of course, believe that Satanism is a valid and, I think, an important topic for Christians and for the church to address. However, I confess to you that I speak to this topic tonight with a certain level of discomfort. In preparation, I've listened to tapes and read all kinds of interesting material, interviewed some individuals, and come to something of a pair of conclusions. I've concluded that the more I learned, the more I realized how very little I knew and know about the topic of Satanism. And I have found, as you often find when you enter into a topic with which you are largely unfamiliar, that the more I learned, the more I discovered what a vast, vast subject matter this is. For example, I came across one source that on several occasions quoted a 54-volume encyclopedia of Satanism. And I think of the magnitude of the information in a set of books so large. My second discovery is that the more I learned, the more uncomfortable I became. And that is because I'm a Christian, and as a Christian, I am committed to Christian values. And I increasingly found that almost everything that I learned, that I read, that I heard related to Satanism was, to me, repulsive. And that there are limits to the things that I want even to know. In fact, there's somewhat a part of me that wants to sort of get tonight's necessary discussion over with and be done with it as soon as possible. I begin somewhat unusually tonight with about 7 or 8 minutes of a tape that has in it some testimonials of people who have been involved with Satanism, and invite you to listen to these clips that give some information as background to us.
It was just before 2 a.m., September 8, 1985. Two teenage friends were en route to a Circle K store on the northern outskirts of Oklahoma City. They were here for one singular purpose, not to purchase anything, but to take a man's life, to murder in cold blood. As they entered the store, Sean Sellers slowly raised the .44 caliber Magnum and fired. Today, Sellers claims the devil made him do it. Perhaps, indeed, he did.
I took my blood and I wrote in it, "I renounce God. I renounce Jesus. I will serve only Satan. Death to my enemy, love to my friends, death to my enemies. Reggie Satanus, Ave Satanus, Hail Satan, now sign my name." And that was my pact with Satan. That was my selling of my soul in my own blood to the devil.
Most Southern Baptists probably would like to dismiss the stories as being untrue or just somebody's story. But we receive so many reports from so many different places around this country that we have to believe that there is something to them.
Sean Sellers represents a growing number of teenagers across our nation who have found themselves practicing Satanism, a ritualistic, often gruesome form of devil worship that's difficult to believe, much less understand. Lindsay Deathridge understands the nightmare Sellers faced. Through peer pressure, Lindsay became involved in a satanic group and today bears the emotional and physical scars of her occult practice. Ann has been forced to hide from her former friends, members of the Satanist group that today seek revenge for her betrayal. From her seclusion, Ann recalls her involvement in Satanism and the death of a best friend. This is not fiction. The testimonies of these individuals reveal a culture that can be found in almost every community throughout our nation. It's a testimony of our troubled youth, of peer pressure, of a need to belong that ultimately leads into what many believe is the darkest side of the occult. Sean Sellers, a 19-year-old resident of the Oklahoma State Penitentiary in McAlester, Oklahoma, is currently awaiting execution on death row.
I had a whole bunch of unanswered questions within me, and no one had the answers. And I think that's one of the reasons I got into Satanism, is because no one had the answers that I was looking for.
Sellers' venture into Satanism prompted him to commit the ultimate sin against God and man, the murder of a convenience store clerk near his home in northeast Oklahoma City. That unresolved crime bolstered Sellers' courage in his dark worship, leading him deeper into satanic practices. 5 months later, after performing a ritual, Sellers walked through his home to the bedroom of his mother and stepfather and murdered them as they slept.
I was beginning to suffer from horrible dreams about the people that I used to love. It didn't seem like I loved them anymore. It seemed like I hated them and like I wanted them dead. And this was everybody I knew, just everyone that I knew. Everyone that cared for me or loved me, I didn't want to have anything to do with them. I wanted to see them die. And then one day I woke up and it wasn't a dream. It was real.
In a wooded area outside Oklahoma City called Five Mile, several covens met to practice their satanic rituals. Lindsay Dethridge joined her friends one evening and learned the price of peer pressure.
My friends were into it, so I stuck with my friends. I walked in there, catching each other, and they were passing around a chalice full of blood. You've got to drink this. I said, I'm not drinking someone's blood. And Rachel, they gave Rachel a hard time about it because, man, she's going to end up narking on us. I had no intentions of telling on them, but it kind of scared Rachel. She said, you've got to go along with this. You can get me in trouble here. So I went ahead and I drank the blood. Got sick afterwards, but...
This initial participation in the group's rituals opened the door for other satanic practices, and Lindsay soon found herself the subject of a satanic blood sacrifice.
Okay, they would lay a new member down on three to four stones, and they'd have on a white robe with a V-neck, and they would engrave a little cross on your stomach, on your chest. And the high priest, which is sitting back giving the orders, has his helper come along and drink the blood off your chest. And everyone else is just sitting back watching this. And you're so high on the drugs that they've given you that you really don't care who's around watching this. So, okay, just hurry up and get it over with. It is painful. It really is. Cutting yourself, getting cut is painful. At least it was. You get used to it later on.
In the desert outside Phoenix, Arizona, a young teenage girl lives in constant fear of her past. Anne broke the Satanist code of silence to work with police authorities after leaving her satanic group. Her advice to them:
be prepared. It's going to scare the pants off you, some of the things you hear and some of the things you might even see.
In a remote location on the outskirts of town, Anne joined her friends in satanic rituals and sacrifice. Today, the remnants of active Satanists remain. Smearing the underside of a nearby bridge are various satanic signs: a pentagram, the star within a circle, a distorted cross, the mark of the beast, 666. All are recognizable symbols of satanic worship, and for Anne, symbols of fear, constant reminders of a painful past.
I guess this is what scared me the most. We'd been playing with the Ouija board that night, and a friend of mine, she asked the Ouija board, she said, when will I die? And the Ouija board said, you're going to die by the time you're 18 years old. That friend of mine moved away, and she was 18. She hadn't died yet. So she went in her garage and turned on the car and died of carbon monoxide poisoning. I heard about it the next day. It just about killed me. And it scared me so bad.
Satanism is ultimately destructive. And a person who becomes involved in Satanism, if he remains in that practice, in some way is going to be self-destructive, whether it's taking his own life or the life of someone else, or simply through the abuse of his own body by the use of drugs.
The practice of Satanism affects each individual differently, but one consistent theme permeates the minds of everyone involved, a complete preoccupation with violence and death.
I went in my room, I got my shotgun out, and I took it completely apart in a daze, and cleaned it, put it back together, put a shell in it, and put it to my head and was reaching for the trigger when I realized what I was doing.
There are still people you can see the scars on, and I'm one of them. And a group of friends would, you know, actually physically cut themselves and bleed. And we would almost go to the point of committing suicide, but we wouldn't go all the way. As a matter of fact, I kind of looked forward to death. No, it was kind of like, wow, you know, death, it's neat.
Well, let there be no doubt that Satan is real. The Bible clearly teaches the reality of Satan, or the devil, as a powerful, spiritual, personal being. I read to you the experience of Jesus from Matthew chapter 4. That then Jesus was led by the Spirit into the desert to be tempted by the devil. After fasting 40 days and 40 nights, he was hungry. The tempter came to him and said, "If you are the Son of God, tell these stones to become bread." Jesus answered, "It is written, man does not live by bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Then the devil took him to the holy city and had him stand on the highest point of the temple. "If you are the Son of God," he said, "throw yourself down, for it is written that he will command his angels concerning you, and they will lift you up in their hands so that you will not strike your foot against a stone." Jesus answered, "It is also written, do not put the Lord your God to the test." Again, the devil took him to a very high mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world and their splendor. "All this I will give you," he said, "if you will bow down and worship me." Jesus said to him, "Away from me, Satan, for it is written, worship the Lord your God and serve him only." And then the devil left him, and angels came and attended him. The devil is real, and spiritual warfare also is real. The Bible clearly teaches that there is a great and a terrible conflict going on between the powers of heaven, the powers of good, and the powers of hell, the powers of evil, and that we as human mortals are caught up in the midst of that conflict, involuntarily, it's true, but sometimes with frightening consequences. Let me read to you again just a few lines from Ephesians chapter 6, verses 10 through 12. "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in his mighty power. Put on the full armor of God so that you can take your stand against the devil's schemes. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, and against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realm." Satan is real, and the conflict is real. However, there's a great deal of sometimes foolish and sometimes unfortunate misunderstanding about Satan. For example, the Bible clearly teaches us that Satan is a spirit. He is not a human man who is red in color and has a cape and horns and a pitchfork and a long tail. That caricature, if anything, has somehow lessened the understanding of the reality of Satan. Satan is not all-powerful. There are some who think that Satan is some sort of co-equal but evil equivalent of God, and that they are equal competitors in the universe between good and evil. But that is clearly not true, for God is ultimate and is sovereign, and he alone is omnipotent. Perhaps the greatest misunderstanding has to do with where Satan is. The fact is that he is not all present. He cannot be more than one place at one time. So if he is in Bangladesh, then he is not in Burnsville. If he is in East Berlin, then he is not in Eden Prairie. Only God can be more than one place at one time, and Satan is not God, and therefore he is unilocal or in one place only. Satan, furthermore, contrary to a lot of misunderstanding, does not directly cause all sins. In fact, I'm convinced and know that the Bible teaches that if Satan were removed from the scene, that sinful human beings would have no great difficulty sinning without Satan's help. If you look forward in history to come in the book of Revelation, it is predicted that there will be a period of 1,000 years when Satan's influence will be totally removed from earth and from the human experience, and that we humans will sin nonetheless, and vehemently so, during that millennial period. But there is a difference. Although Satan is real, and although we are sinners, and although there is misunderstanding, a difference between Satan and Satanism. At least theoretically, it's possible to be involved in Satanism without Satan. It's also possible to be involved with Satan without being involved in Satanism. Let's talk about the categories of Satanism, but first I suppose some definitions might be helpful. The strictest definition of Satanism is a Satanism that is defined in terms of Christianity. So it is really the opposite of what Christianity is. Whereas Christianity is the worship of Jesus, Satanism, by its strictest definition, is a worship of Satan. While Christianity is for peace, Satanism is for violence. While Christianity is for good, Satanism is for evil. And the opposites flow through, even to the symbols. So the symbol of Christianity is the cross, and the symbol of Satanism, which you will sometimes see in literature or around about, is a cross that is upside down. It is inverted. Satanism, in this strict definition, promotes hate rather than love, and it is in every regard the opposite of all that Christianity is as taught in the Bible. However, there is also a broader definition of Satanism, a broader definition that really is the equivalent of paganism. It's a definition of worshiping Satan and acknowledging and honoring him and all of the things that go with him, independent, if need be, of Christianity. It includes primitive religions like witchcraft and voodooism. Also includes ancient religions from Europe and from Asia and Africa. Many of those religions and their idols and their gods are those that actually date back to biblical times. In fact, this encyclopedia of Satanism traces many of those back even to the ancient religions of Egypt that were around during the days when the Old Testament was written. Many of the same names, many of the same gods, many of the same rituals of Egypt and of Greece and of Babylon. Satanism, though, as popularly understood, as referred to in America and referenced in our newspapers, is really something of a mix. So it is a combination of a strict definition, in that sense, the opposite of Christianity, but also has brought into it many elements that have no opposite equivalent within the Christian faith. Pagan rituals, things like animal sacrifice, even including human sacrifice, such things as spells and curses and symbols and ceremonies from these ancient religions. It's also important, sort of definitionally, to understand that Satanism probably ought not be construed as an organized religion, at least not in the sense that we think of it as we think of Islam or as Christianity, as being a structured, organized religion. Nevertheless, it can be complicated. It can be complex. But it's very broad. In some cases, it is very loose and incorporates a whole mixture of things, some of which may in fact be contradictory. And in other cases, Satanism may be quite prescribed and quite definite in what it expects. Certainly, not all Satanists agree, either in their definitions or their experiences of Satanism, nor ought we think that all Satanists are networked together because simply they are not. I think perhaps a rough comparison might be made between Satanism and communism, in that communism does have certain ingredients in common, some philosophical tenets that are all the same. And certainly all true communism may be traced back to Karl Marx. But there's a great deal of difference between communism as expressed in Cuba and communism that is expressed in mainland China, or a great deal of difference between communism in Angola and communism in countries like Albania that were or are part of Eastern Europe. Significant contrasts that are different and yet still under the overall umbrella of communism. And so in the same way, we can say that there are certain similarities that transcend all of the differences of Satanism, but that there are also a lot of differences. I suppose you would say that the common elements, by the strict definition, that is that Satanism is the opposite of Christianity, would be that Satanism worships Satan and opposes Jesus Christ. Satanists are those, well, a good example is what's here in Matthew 4. You recall that Satan, in the temptation of Jesus, offered to him extraordinary powers and wealth, said to him, you can have all the world and all the kingdom. And Satanists, in the strict definition, are those who have said yes to what Jesus said no to. Jesus obviously gave credibility, credence to Satan and to his power, but rejected the power and the wealth that Satan offered and affirmed his allegiance to God the Father and to that which was right. But Satanists are those who would then say, Satan has offered me a good deal, perhaps beauty or wealth or power or whatever the offerings may be in our society, in our world. But Satanists are those who have said yes to Satan, where Jesus, on the other hand, has said no to Satan. And as a result, often suffer the later consequences of this allegiance. By the broader definition, the common element, I suppose you would say, of all of Satanism is that it serves a single master, and that is the devil, and serves a single cause, and that is evil. So that Satanism, by its central characteristic, is a matter of sin and opposition to righteousness. Now, with that sort of grid as background, let's look briefly at three different categories of Satanism, the first of which we might call those who are the curious dabblers, particularly or most often seen in our society among young people, particularly early adolescents, who are in some ways perhaps the most curious dabblers in a lot of areas of life. However, those who become involved in Satanism in many cases are those who are in reaction to Christianity, reaction to their parents, and particularly in reaction to their perceived notion of their parents' religion. Typically, from the studies that have been done, such dabbling in Satanism begins with symbols, begins with entertainment. There is the pentagram, which is a five-pointed star, the top point of which is upward, and typically it has a circle around it. There's satanic art, there is satanic music, there is a whole culture of satanic movies that are frequently watched, often centering on violence. All of those things that the dabblers check into. Actually, you can go into many bookstores in a lot of the malls, including near us, and you can go to sections of the bookstore, sometimes under the title of New Age books, and there you can buy, or else you can go to the local county library and there borrow a great deal of literature to be read that many of the dabblers become familiar with that deals with Satanism. As it expands, it includes deliberate attitudes and actions of evil. Typically, with the dabbler, we're talking about experimentation, often experimentation that is geared to hurting someone else, sometimes hurting oneself, often seeking to get even with other people who have somehow offended or at least perceived to offend that person. I'm convinced that many of the dabblers really have a minimal notion of what they're getting into. They do not fully understand the rituals nor their meaning, the games that they buy or the music they hear or the books that they read. They're simply not well informed about what they're becoming involved in as they dabble in Satanism. The results of all this, in some cases, are nothing. In some cases, it's simply a passing fad, and in other cases, it leads to greater involvement. It seems to me that all of us, at some time or other, become involved in dabbling in all kinds of different things. For some people, it's in a hobby or it's into politics or sports. There's some people who dabble in Christianity and come to church or may buy a Bible that they read a little bit in. And out of that, some of them simply move on. It's never that they really understand it or it really becomes a major part of their lives. And there are others that become deeply involved in that hobby or that sport or that religion. And so I think it is altogether possible for probably the majority of these dabblers to get beyond it and on to other things in life and forget it. Or it may be the innocent beginning of an introduction that leads to that which is deep and disastrous. We need to distinguish between that curious dabbling and a whole different category of involvement with Satanism that is called the Church of Satan, that founded and headed in the United States by a man named Anton LaVey, who also is a purveyor of the Satanist Bible, which some of you may have seen or have read, is the leader of the Satanist Church, or the Church of Satan, which, by the way, is a recognized religion with full legal standing in the United States. And so it has a tax-exempt status and would be considered like any other churches or any other religions. It has its own places of worship, it has its own ritual, it has its own literature, it has its own set of doctrines. Now, the Church of Satan is obviously, I mean, hardly needs to be said, anti-Christian and clearly sinful by biblical definitions. However, I have to tell you, and maybe I am naive and ignorant, I have a great deal of trouble taking it very seriously as a competing religion. For I see the Church of Satan as not only not very large, but not very effective and not very attractive. I hear relatively little of it, and most of the references that are made are rather sensationalistic in journalism or in Christian religious circles where some type of statement is trying to be made. Personally, I perceive that this organization is really more strange than it is satanic, and it really does not deviate to the extent that serious Satanism does. Now, perhaps again, that is because of my ignorance or my naivete, but at least as I see the Church of Satan, it can hardly be aligned with the extremes and the genuine horrors that serious Satanism incorporates, which leads us to a third and a most serious and frightening category. And that is what we might call cult Satanism. By far, it is the most serious and the most frightening of all. Highly secretive, difficult to learn about. Police organizations around the country have tried to research it, as well as religious scholars and secular researchers. They've found that those who are involved in it are very, very secretive, very reluctant, often sworn under threat of death not to tell anything about the rituals or the involvements that are included. It is because of that, and because so comparatively little really is known, that the estimates vary widely to the number of people who are genuine cult Satanists in the United States, ranging from the lowest by far of all estimates of about 60,000 people in this country to as high as 1.7 million. Deep commitment to the ways of Satan, if not the person of Satan, marks the cult Satanist. In this type of Satanism, raw evil prevails. Rituals and acts, cruel things, violent things, murder and torture and rape. They're terrible stories, beginning often with animal sacrifice, moving on to human torture, the type of thing that you heard in the tape of ritually drinking human blood. Pledges of secrecy among the cultists, which then captures those who are involved to stay in it, or if for some reason they leave, to keep their mouths shut on that which they have seen under terrible threats in case they break the code of silence. Now, I know that there may be different evaluations of what I hear called cult Satanism. There are some people, perhaps from a secular perspective, who would say that what you have here is simply the worst of sociopathic human behavior. and that would seek to be a social description rather than a spiritual description of what there takes place. Even, of course, by that definition and by that description, the atrocities are breathtaking. And then there are others who would interpret it for what I would consider it to be, and that is a spiritual phenomenon, and a horrible spiritual phenomenon at that. But regardless of what your conclusion may be, I think it is safe to say that either way, whether it is an awful, evil spiritual phenomenon, or it is something that is sociopathic, in either case, it clearly plays into the hands of Satan and represents everything that is contrary to God and is evil, terribly evil. In cult Satanism, there are complex rituals of initiation. There are rituals of involvement and growth and worship until a person's life is increasingly drawn into it, until completely controlled and evil prevails. Many of the things that are done are so bad that they are almost impossible to believe. In fact, there's one theory that says that Satanists take a certain pride in the worst of some of the stories leaking out because they are so incredible that they are discounted and therefore not reported by the media and not believed by those who hear them because they seem to be so terribly far-fetched. Some of the things, and I assure you I'm not going to give you a list of these things because I think it, in most cases, would be horribly inappropriate to do so. Let me say that some of them are really just too terrible to even imagine. I give you really one of the simpler of the examples, although it in itself is a terrible thing, that there are police authorities, credible sources around the country, that are analyzing the statistics of missing children in the United States. And you know that that is a very large number. And are estimating on the conservative end that as many as one-fifth of the missing children in America may have been eaten as part of satanic cannibalism. And it is from there that many of the rituals, in a sense, become worse. And I page through book after book and story after story of these kinds of things until I had to stop. Reminded me as a college student of reading the huge tome, the Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. And I remember having difficulty picking up the book and being willing to go on, although it was a college course assignment, in the detail of the things that were done by Nazi physicians in the death camps of Europe. I mean, frightening, awful. It's just hard to imagine that people could even dream up such things, much less do them. And yet, I've discovered that many of the things that Satanists not only think up, but in fact do, put them in a league with, if not a league far beyond, that which Shirer reports in The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich. I think in talking about all this, there are a couple of expressions of Satanism that fit into all of these categories. It is taking a look at both the symbol and the substance of what we're here discussing. Now, you know that a person may wear a cross on a chain around his or her neck and not be a Christian. I mean, you can go into JCPenney or a jewelry store or someplace else, and it's a simple thing to do, to buy a gold cross and a gold chain and then match the clasp behind your neck and wear it. That, of course, does not make a person a Christian. However, that symbol does universally represent Jesus Christ. Likewise, it is true that a person may tattoo a satanic goat's head on his or her chest or stomach or arm and not be a Satanist, although it is broadly recognized that the satanic goat head is a symbol of Satan and of Satanism. So the symbols are one aspect of these categories. The substance of it is quite different, although not unrelated. Some of the things of the substance of that already mentioned, And I suppose it's possible for the substance, the drinking of blood, the cannibalism of children, the rituals of murder and of death and all of these things, without having the symbols present. However, symbols and substance are meant to go together. Normally, they belong together. It is intended that the cross be a symbol for Christians, and it is intended that the symbols of Satanism go with the substance of Satanism, that the two normally belong together, although people who become entrenched in the symbols may not necessarily be involved in the substance. These things bring us to some warnings, the first of which is simply common sense, that what we are talking about here tonight is dangerous stuff, that people's lives are destroyed, that Satanism is frightening and evil, deeply evil. So just as a matter of common sense, it ought to be avoided. Just as a matter of common sense, a person does not go swimming in a lake of toxic waste. It's just something you wouldn't do. And so it ought to be something that a person just wouldn't do to become involved in Satanism. Even, at least for me, I speak, at the seemingly innocent and apparently introductory levels, I would choose and have chosen to stay away from the fortune tellers in the midway at the Minnesota State Fair, from Ouija boards at the game stores in the malls around our metropolitan area, from the black heavy metal music, from satanic symbols, and from anything that is otherwise associated with Satanism. I think that that's simply a common sense warning. But let me give to you some biblical warning, turning to the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. In chapter 18 and verses 9 and following are some warnings that were given to the people of Israel as they first entered into the promised land, but warning that is fit for any generation in any land, in any place, that when you enter the land that the Lord your God is giving you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the nations there. Let no one be found among you who sacrifices his son or daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, interprets omens, engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, or who consults the dead. Anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. And because of these detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. Or recall back to what we read earlier from Matthew chapter 4 and Jesus' experience in the wilderness, how Jesus answered the temptations to Satanism, and they must have been real temptations. My, if the offers of Satan were tempting to Jesus, surely they can be tempting to us. And yet he responded with supernatural wisdom, saying no, and quoting the Bible and claiming the higher authority of God. Or listen to the words of James 4:7. Submit yourselves then to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Or from Ephesians 6:13, to put on the full armor of God, so that when the day of evil comes, you may be able to stand your ground. A common sense warning and a Bible warning, multiple warnings from the Bible. And finally, what I think are the very good words of the English writer of an earlier part of our generation, C.S. Lewis, as he wrote in his famous writing, The Screwtape Letters, good advice. That there are two equal and opposite errors into which our race can fall about the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence. The other is to believe and to feel an unhealthy interest in them. It seems to me that a lot of people are prone to fall into one of those two equal and opposite errors. Either to say, all of this is nonsense, or to get very, very interested in it. We ought to heed Lewis's wise words. Believe in Satan, yes, but not take an unhealthy interest either in him or in Satanism. Which brings us to the same place to which we often come when struggling with some issues here at Wooddale Church. And I say it carefully, although I suspect you've heard it often before. Let us begin by first being loyal to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ first. And let us be for him far more than we are against anyone or anything else. May each of us as Christians, and may we collectively together as a church, not be known for what we are against, including Satan and Satanism, but may we live for and be known in terms of what we are for, and that is Jesus Christ and his truth. To be so committed to Jesus Christ and so faithful and so godly that we are then able to stand against any error, able to stand against any evil, and able to stand against any enemy, including Satan himself. There's an old hymn now, hundreds of years, written, you know the words from Martin Luther, that I think a fitting way for us to respond both to the reality of Satan and the far greater power of Jesus Christ. It is hymn number 118, and we stand to sing together the powerful tune and all the four stanzas of "A Mighty Fortress Is Our God." Let's stand as we sing. Submit yourselves then to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Good night. God bless you all.